there's something hidden in the Mishkan. Nechama Leibovitz, the great 20th century compiler of Torah commentary, calls our attention to a group of modern scholars who sensitized us to the use of repetition as a rhetorical device in the description of the building of the Mishkan. She cites a list of the greats: Buber, Rosenzweig, Benno Jacob, Casuto, Meir Weiss, and others, who all highlight the way key phrases in our text echo an earlier story in the Torah. The earliest, in fact. It is the legendary Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, who was also a fine biblical scholar, who is credited with discovering the striking parallels between the language of the Mishkan instructions and the story of creation. He lays it out magnificently for us, and though it requires some rearranging, the resemblance is undeniable. Listen to this. Okay, here's creation. Vayar Elokim et kol asher asah, vihine tov me'od. And God saw all that God had made, and behold, it was very good. And it was morning, and it was evening, one day. And the heavens and the earth were finished, vayechulu hashamayim v'haaretz, and all their array. On the seventh day, God finished God's work which God had made. Vayechal Elokim biyom hashvi'i melachto asher asah. And God rested on the seventh day, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. Vayverech Elokim et yom hashvi'i vaykadesh oto. Okay, now listen to the Mishkan. Vayar Moshe et kol hamalacha. And Moshe saw all of the work, vehine, and behold, they had made it just as the Eternal had commanded. And all the labor of the Mishkan was finished, v'techel kol avodat Mishkan. And on the seventh day, bayom hashvi'i, God called out to Moshe from within the cloud. And Moshe finished the work, v'yichal Moshe et hamalacha, and Moshe blessed them, v'yvarech otam, Moshe. Make me a sanctuary, v'asu li mikdash, and I will dwell among you. The reverberation is stunning, and the message of this parallelism seems easy enough to extrapolate. As Leibovitz puts it, the Lord created heaven and earth and all therein for man to dwell in, and created them in 6 days, and rested on the seventh day. Similarly, Moshe was summoned on the seventh day to the cloud to see the pattern of the Mishkan that it was his duty to erect in order to provide a place on earth for the divine presence. God made a home for us on earth, so now we make a home for God on earth. Buber's excavation, through modern literary technique, of the symmetry embedded in the text appears to us like a revelation. But if Ecclesiastes is right that there's nothing new under the sun, we should not be surprised to find that the rabbis of the Midrashic period had already spotted much of this pattern many centuries earlier. Here's a version we find in the Midrash Tanchuma on Parshat Pekudei. Amar Rabbi Yaakov b'Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Yaakov, son of Rabbi Asi, said, why does it say in the Psalms, Hashem, ahavti me'on beitecha, Hashem, I loved your house and abode, the dwelling place of your glory? Because it is being equated with the creation of the world. How so? On the seventh day, the heavens and the earth were finished. And with the Mishkan it is written, and all the labor was finished. With the creation of the world it is written, and God blessed, and with the Mishkan it is written, and Moshe blessed them. The very same references, suggesting the very same comparison, picked up hundreds of years earlier by our rabbis, whose keen literary eyes were never sleeping. And they didn't stop there, for there was one other primary link between creation and construction that they wanted to establish. That is, they noticed that over the course of the chapters that detail the building of the Mishkan, the observance of Shabbat is mentioned twice, once in Parshat Ki Tisa, and once again at the beginning of Parshat Vayakhel. Here's how Vayakhel begins. Vayakhel Moshe et kol adat b'nei Yisrael vayomar lehem. Moshe gathered together the whole community of the children of Israel and said to them, these are the things that the Eternal has commanded you to do. On 6 days you shall do work, and on the seventh day you will have a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Eternal. Whoever does work on it shall be put to death. Kol ha'osebo melacha yumat. What did our rabbis make of this abrupt insertion of the commandment to keep Shabbat just before the final description of the Mishkan? Surely this can be fit into the framework of the other creation parallels we've seen so far. Shabbat is the culmination of creation, after all, the time to stop and reflect on the work that has been done, and to refresh. But our rabbis went further than just observing the thematic parallels. In their discussion of the laws of Shabbat in the Talmud, this passage from Parshat Vayakhel contains the very phrase they use as the source for the 39 categories of prohibited work. This derivation is based on an intricate bit of play with the words, "These are the things." Bahatanya, Rebbe Omer, Dvarim, Hadvarim, Eile Hadvarim. It was taught, Rebbe said, that things count for two, the things makes it three, and the letters in the Hebrew word for these, Eile, has the numerical value of 36, Aleph, Lamed, and He. So these are the things, Eile Hadvarim, is a hint for the 39 forbidden labors that Moshe was told on Mount Sinai. The interpretive method here is rather extreme. Rebbe sees the phrase, these are the things that the Eternal has commanded you to do, and in order to figure out what and how many of those things there are, he gives himself permission to count up the words in the sentence, and then even the numerical value of the Hebrew letters in the word for these, following the numerological tradition of Gematria. With all those rules in place, he arrives at the number 39. For 39 forbidden labors. Add to that the use of the word melacha, work, as both the term for that which is forbidden on Shabbat and for that which is required to build the Mishkan, and soon we come to the conclusion that the work that is to be forbidden on Shabbat is precisely those 39 categories of work which were required to build the Mishkan. That is, after all, precisely what God rested from on that first seventh day, all the work that he had done, kol melachto asher asah. The parallel between the Sabbath and the sanctuary slowly becomes clear. We engage in work to build the Mishkan, and then we refrain from just that work when it is completed. And then, as promised, God dwells among us. This mirrors the way that God engaged in work to build the world and then refrained from that work when it was completed. The name for that completion was Shabbat, the Sabbath day. And so it turns out that this structure, the thing we have been building now for 5 weeks of Parshot, is in fact Shabbat herself. It is she who will be the eternal sanctuary in which both God and Israel shall dwell. The Mishkan was to be temporary, after all, only lasting through the desert journey. And even the temple turned out to be temporary, for physical buildings can always be destroyed. But Shabbat is to carry us through time. These links forged with the words of the Torah, first broadly between the creation of the world and the building of the Mishkan, and then specifically between Shabbat and the completion of the Mishkan, lend new force to Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel's famous phrasing in his book, The Sabbath. The seventh day is a palace in time which we build, he says. He may have meant that poetically, but now we're able to understand it literally. We actually build ourselves a Shabbat. For it was not enough to create a sanctuary in space for God to dwell in, as God had once done for us. We then had to finish all the work we had done, to step back and see it completed, and then to rest and be refreshed on the seventh day, as God also once did. And so we build and complete this palace in time again, anew, every week. We bless it with the light of our candles and sanctify it with wine. And though our structure is invisible to the naked eye, we who sit within it know that God dwells there among us.